everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing in life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers since from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. Got back from Dayton, Ohio, where I was teaching at the Irma Bombeck Humor Writers Conference. Great conference. Great bunch of keynote speakers. Oh, my goodness. What a lot of fun. Never been to Ohio. Got to see it. It was pretty much looked like the rest of America, as expected. So that was a lot of fun. If I saw you there, hello. It's great to meet you. But back to this interview, Linda Stewart Henley. She, third novel, interesting one. She mentions this sort of event from real life, her father's life, that it was based on, but she would not tell us what that event is, lest it spoil the book. So you're going to have to read it to find out. Linda Stewart Henley was born in Liverpool, United Kingdom, and grew up in Surrey. She attended school in Carshalton, just south of London, before moving to the United States, where she completed her education. She is the author of two other novels, Estelle and Waterbury Winter, but she lives now in Anacortes, Washington, with her husband, and her most recent novel is Kate's War. That's what we were talking about, and it was a great conversation, and I'm glad I get to share it with you now. Enjoy. Okay, listen, we got Linda Stewart Henley on the show. Linda, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, well, people might have noticed, might, even in that greeting, a slight accent. Linda is, she hails from England, obviously, that's where she was born. She currently resides, though, not far from me here in Seattle. You said you've been here 15 years. What was it, education that drew you here? What brought you to
Well, no, I've been in the Washington State for 15 years, but I've lived in other parts of the country. I've been in America since I was 16.
Man, you held on, but you held on. You know, I was just interviewing a novelist in America, a Seattleite who moved to England and who's currently wrote her novel. And I could hear a little tiny bit of the English accent creeping into her, but you have held on to onto her American accent, but you have held on to your English accent. To what do you attribute that?
Well, I read somewhere once that there's a critical age, I think it's 13, where people always retain a little bit of their accent if their first language was when they were between 1 and 13 or something like that. I don't know if that's true. I think some people adapt much more than I did. But, you know, I'm the only one in my family that lives here. Mm. We used to live as a family, but everybody else went back. So I think maybe because I wanted to keep some kind of a connection with my English family, I didn't want to become completely Americanized.
I understand. You got to connect to your roots. So they went back. I assume they came over, your family came over for like parents' work or something. What brought them over here?
Well, my father was a doctor, but he wanted to do research. Mm. And during the 60s, American universities really encouraged British people to come and do research. They called it the brain drain, you know. And so he came to North Carolina originally for a year to the University of North Carolina, did research there. And then we ended up staying a bit longer as a family, but then eventually everybody went back except me. So I'm still
right
here.
Now talk to me about, so how old were you when they went back?
I had just graduated from college and I was enjoying my life.
Yeah.
Wanted to be independent. So I was 21 and they went back. So I just stayed.
Wait, that must have been a big moment, huh?
Yes.
For you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been, although I assume when you went to college or to university, as you might have said at one point, you were living away from home at that point anyway. Yeah. Or were you commuting from your family's home?
Well, It was actually a pretty dramatic time in my life because my parents got divorced. So I didn't
Oh.
really have a home for a while, but I went to graduate school. So that kept me from being in the real world for a while. And then I got married. So, that's
Right.
what happened.
How are you finding the real world now that you're in
The
it?
real world. Well, I don't know. The real world right now, that's a really difficult question to answer. I think it's one of the reasons I write novels is because I can make up my own world that I like better.
You know what though? I'm okay with that. Sometimes, think of it this way, because of course you're writing the book I'm interviewing you about, Kate's War. Congratulations, by the way. Novel number
Thank you.
published, novel number three. I don't know how many are in the drawer, but at least published novel number three. It describes a world, a real world, London, England, World War II, very real. But I always think of stories as our chance, even if you're writing about a real time and place, our chance to frame it in a way we want to. Does that resonate?
Our chance to fight, you're saying?
Oh, I so frame it the way we
Oh,
want to. In
frame
other words,
it.
see the world the way we want to see it, that from the angle we want this. Does that make sense?
Yes, well, I wanted to write the book about my father's experience. There was one event that he never talked about. I only learned about when I read his unpublished memoir after he died. But there was an important event, and I thought it was worth recording because a lot of things that happened in World War II just got lost. We didn't hear the
Sure.
stories. People didn't talk about it very much. And this was a pretty dramatic situation that my father experienced. So that's what inspired me to write the novel. And then I had to construct a kind of a framework around that incident because the incident itself would have made a very thin novel. I needed
Right,
a
right.
more of a story. So that was what I had to do, is construct a story around that incident.
All right, so we'll come back to Kate's War in a moment. I want to back up a little bit. You get out of college, you go to graduate school. What did you get your degree in?
This doesn't make any sense. None of my life really makes any sense.
Welcome to the club.
I majored in German.
Oh, of course. Oh. You want know thy enemy. Okay, so you majored in German and all right, you went for a master's in that?
Well, I've after I this is a funny story. I went to Tulane University in New Orleans, and I loved it. It was wonderful living in New Orleans. The environment was interesting. I actually wrote my first novel about that city, about life then. Not then, it was
There.
actually then, but also earlier. It's a historical fiction novel. But I studied German for 4 years in college, but because it was really a literature degree, I did a lot of reading about old German texts and all the German literature, the
Right.
important parts of it. Anyhow, I never actually learned to speak the language. So
What?
my no,
Okay.
I didn't have a conversation class. So
Right.
my senior year of college, my advisor took me aside and said, Linda, what are you going to do next year when you graduate? And I said, I have no idea. And he said, well, maybe you should go to the country and learn to speak the language that you've been studying for 4 years. So I did. I went on a program for future teachers of German, 4-month program in Germany, and pledged to only speak German. That's the
Yeah,
way you learn to speak the
sure.
language better, you know. And so I did learn after that how
Oh,
to speak
good.
the language.
This would have been probably, ooh, it's the height of the Cold War when the wall was still up and all that. Yeah, would have been.
Yes, the wall is still there. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, all right, so you learned to speak. All right, so you learned to speak German. And did you go into academia?
Well, I was thinking I would teach German in high school, but I decided after my student teaching experience, I didn't really want to do that anymore. I mean, I'm telling you, my life's just been fragments here.
It's you know what we figure it out as we go along, Linda. We don't know, just like we don't know exactly what our stories will be until we write them. I think our lives are this way. That's okay. And so, all right, well, okay. So, but you've written three novels. You published three novels. Who knows
Yes.
how much you've written? But the writer is always bubbling around in us,
doing something, causing trouble, if not given a voice. How were you writing a lot? Were you writing in journals? Were you writing poems? Were you trying your hand at short stories? What was the writer doing while you were teaching and learning German and all the rest?
I always kept journals. I just liked writing about what was going on, and that was good. Kept my hand in about writing, but I never wrote anything. I never even considered writing a novel until after I stopped working. When I retired, I took a class. Actually, my husband taught the class, a class in fiction writing,
Wait, your
and
husband taught it and you took it?
he made me take it.
And your marriage survived. That is a wow.
Well,
Okay,
I
interesting.
have to remind myself when I'm in the class that I am a student, not the spouse.
Oh God, that is that. Of all the things you've told me, that's the weirdest. Okay, but because I'm a teacher and a husband, and my wife's a writer, I can't. She sat in my class. I don't know how that would go. But okay, but your relationship is strong. You did that. He made you take it because he sensed you wanted to write, and he said, "Come on." And he's a novelist too, I assume.
He didn't exactly make me take it. He just said, when he announced he was going to teach the class, he said, "Well, you can take the class." And I said, "No, I don't know how to write fiction. I've never written anything like that. I can't do it." He said, "Yes, you can take the class." So partly to support him, I took the class. It's a small class. He keeps it to 12 students. It's a seminar, really. And we have to write at least 2,000 words every week for 18 weeks. It's an 18-week class. So during those classes, during the 10 years that I've taken it, three of my stories that I started in the class have been published. So
That's
I guess
awesome.
I did learn how to write fiction.
What did you, and so, all right, so this was not your idea in a way, and you started doing it, but what did you think when you started it? Did you like it?
I wasn't very good at the beginning. I mean, I didn't understand that there is a craft, fiction writing is a craft. You have to learn what works. And I didn't know anything about backstory and character arcs and inciting incidents and all the things that novelists know, but I had to learn. I learned them. And then when I finally wrote a story that somebody said I should publish, I got a really good editor. And she helped me enormously to avoid pitfalls that I would have otherwise just fallen into.
What were the pitfalls that you did not see that you would have fallen into that she saved you from?
Well, this one editor who's very demanding, and that's good. She was very careful to make sure that every character I had, the main character, had a good arc. The character had to develop, had to be different at the end than she was at the beginning. And I've had two female protagonists and one male. So that was one thing that I had to learn how to do right and make it believable that the person would change, why they would change. So that was the thing. I had to keep working on scenes to really flesh out a character or add depth or layers to the text so that it worked out that way.
And so that was challenging for you. It didn't occur to you, you didn't when you were first thinking of stories, you didn't think in terms of, you just thought of events more than how characters would change by the events.
Did I make, I'm sorry, could you
Well, when
say
you
that again?
first were conceiving of stories, when you were first writing stories, were you thinking mostly in terms of events and not how those events would change the characters in the story?
Well, one the probably the easiest book I wrote for me of the three, not Kate's War, but the second one, Waterbury Winter, was about an artist, a 45-year-old artist who had lost his way and he had a drinking problem. So he had serious obstacles to overcome to be able to become an artist, the artist that he really was all along. And that was It just meant creating a series of mishaps for this man, and he really was an unfortunate man. He didn't wasn't doing very well at the beginning. He lived alone with his parrot, and he was antisocial and had a lot of bills and debts because he worked in a hardware store. This was just there were events that led to changes.
But the
That
nice thing
that's
about that story is you start with a guy who needs change, who is just crying, who you don't want to leave him there, right?
Right.
Sometimes it's harder when we have a character we love, and it's harder to think of why they need to change.
Yes, and the good thing about that story is that right away, everybody was pulling for him. They wanted him to get better. And he didn't just get better all at once, obviously. He kind of fell off the wagon a few times. But in the end, it's a good story. So
yeah, perhaps you discovered the famous save the cat rule. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that from screenwriting, where in a movie, this is because it's a book on screenwriting. The author's dead now, but it's a lovely book saying that you have a character, your protagonist, in some way or another saves a cat, does something good, whether maybe just gives some money to a homeless person or something. No matter what they do, you know that there's somebody good inside them, you know, coming to come out. Okay, so you wrote two novels. You called them stories. That's lovely. They were book-length projects, but here comes Kate's War. And as you said, it was based upon a real event that your father was involved in when he was a young, how old was he when it was happening, when the World War II hit?
How old was he?
Your dad.
When it ended, he would have been, let me think about this a minute, about 28, I think.
Okay. All right. And so are you willing to, we don't want to have any spoilers, but can you talk about what the event was so that for our audience, so that they get a sense of.
Well, you see, if I tell you too much about the event, it's.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Don't do it. Don't do it then. Okay. That's fine. And so you come across, when did you read his memoir?
It was written during the last years of his life, and he lived in Scotland and I was in America. So I didn't see it when he was writing it.
Sure.
And I didn't actually read it until after he died.
Sure.
And I was absolutely shocked when I read this section about his experience in the war. It's just one small section of the memoir, but it was something he'd never talked about. And I just couldn't believe I didn't know this.
Right.
So that's why I wrote the story, because I wanted to preserve that memory. And I thought the story is worth telling, really.
Right. And so you read that and so you say, okay, I got to preserve it. But like you said, you can't just tell that thing sort of as written in by your father. And so you had to set about constructing a story around it and creating Kate and her challenges. Was that hard for you? Did that come easy, or did you really have to fight to find the story that would reveal the story you wanted to tell?
This was the hardest of my three novels to write, exactly for the reasons you've just said. I had to construct a story that would lead to the end in a logical way. And I wasn't sure I had the writing skills to do it, really.
Yeah.
And so it was a struggle to write this book. But in the end, I think it came out okay. I mean, obviously, people have different views about whether they like it or not. But
were you happy? Did you feel when you finally handed it in and you and your editor had finished working? Were you happy with it? Were you content?
Yes. One of the things I like when I write a novel, each time I've done this, is I enjoy the story world I create. I usually have family. I have ordinary people. These are never heroes.
Right.
And this book, even though it's set in the Second World War, it's not about heroes. It's about ordinary people and an ordinary family, including Kate, and how they adjust to the impending war. The war has been declared at the beginning of the book. War is declared.
Right.
But in England, during the first year of World War II, there was no fighting in the country at all.
Right. Hadn't begun yet. The Battle of Britain hadn't started.
The Blitz started a full year later in 1940. So my novel just takes place during that year after war has been declared on September 3rd, 1939, and ends right when the Blitz starts in September 1940. People were just preparing like mad. They didn't know when the bombs were coming. They expected invasion. So it was a very anxious time, and it's how people had to adjust. It's a story of how everybody lived, really. Ordinary people lived during that time.
How much of your research for it was based on just normal author research, and how much of it was based on conversations you had with your parents?
I didn't talk to anybody about the book, and I'd read a lot of novels set at that time to make sure I had the atmosphere right, the feel of it right. And I read a wonderful historical book about the war, Eric Larson's book.
Which one? Yeah.
The what was it again? The Splendid and the Vile. Splendid and the Vile. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I had I did a lot of research online. You can learn about the events of the war.
Sure.
I had that timeline. I had a timeline that I tried to pay attention to be sure I didn't mix that up and get the. I didn't. As I've said, the book isn't about the war.
No, I understand that.
I'm
sort of. Well, I was curious because apparently, so you didn't. You didn't have a lot of conversations with while they were alive with your parents about their experiences in the war. They didn't share, tell you stories about.
My generation didn't talk about
the
war.
I know.
They just didn't.
I
And
know.
then there was the Official Secrets Act, which meant that people weren't allowed to talk about things. You know, they could be prosecuted if they talked.
Right. So there were no family stories about the war.
Well, my father mentioned a few things that he did, but not the event that I've written about.
Right. No, that was a secret. Sometimes he might not even think of it as a secret, but just not think, tell my kids. I don't want to, you know. Do you think your mom knew everything that he shared?
No, she never mentioned it either. I mean, they weren't married at the time. They were both
They got divorced.
Yeah,
right.
But
that's right.
They met during the war and married during the war. But this event happened while my father was in medical school. He actually took a year out to volunteer before he finished medical school, and that's when it happened. So they didn't talk about. She didn't mention it, although she was a nurse in the war.
Oh, okay. Do you have kids? Do you have children?
I have two children. Yes.
As you've written this book and reflected on your own parents, I know this may be an odd question. I have kids too. Does it make you think about how you talk to them about your life and what you share and what you don't? Has that come up for you at all?
I think our generation is different. We talk a lot more freely about our lives, but we also, I mean, I've never been in a war, you know, I was born after the war, so I don't have those horrible experiences to talk about or to shut out of my life, you know, or my mind. So it's different, really.
Yeah, it's different here in America. I mean, I've read books about set in America during World War II. So because there is, you know, people are having experiences, certainly with loved ones or fighting, but England and Europe, of course, like to have it be there, to have the war be there. We in America, except for the Civil War, that's really not been the case for, it's not been our experience almost at all. It's so distant. It's always, because I mean, the fact is we've lived with war of some kind or another with soldiers from America fighting for the last 25 years in a way, off and on, right? But it doesn't feel like what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Americans were affected. I mean, by all the wars, every war, and the Second World War, because people fought.
Yeah.
But in England, everyone's life was affected.
Well, yeah.
Because they expected the war to come there. They expected to be bombed. They expected to be invaded. They weren't invaded, but they thought they would be.
The closest I can come, I've talked to some people about this, and you and I probably both lived through this a little bit, but growing up, so it sounds like I'm a little younger, but growing up in the 70s in particular, the threat of nuclear war, that's the closest I can think. Because it, you know, I remember it was a thing. Like it was like any day, it just could happen. Just somebody could just decide and then it happens. And so even though it wasn't like the Germans are there or the Nazis are there and they're going to come across the ocean, there was that sense like, hey, it could happen anytime and it could come for us all. I don't know if being a little older, you experienced it that way, but that was certainly my experience of it as a young person.
Yes, I think anytime you feel there's a threat that you can't control, it makes your life, it affects your whole life. You live with that.
You do. Yeah. I've written about it some. It was very interesting. So, okay. So you finished this. And I'm sorry, this is the kind of thing I always forget to check this. Of when was this? When is this book coming out or came out? I'm sorry.
Yesterday.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm so
April
sorry.
April the 9th was pub day.
Oh, my God. I'm talking. Oh, okay. Well, then double congratulations. So this is.
Thank you.
Here we are. All right. God. Okay. Okay. So it's just out. And do you look for, I mean, you had talking to me, but Are you going to try and do some events, some sort of in-person events?
Yes, I have a book signing and I have a discussion in Seattle, actually.
Oh, nice.
Third Place Books.
Yes, know it
Yeah,
well.
that's coming up.
Yeah.
So I have that, and I have various book clubs that I'm going to be visiting and talking to about the book. And I've had a lot of interviews, not just yours, but several of those. So
Good for
it's been a
you.
lot. Yeah.
Oh, Caitlin Hamilton Summey's doing her job. That's good. What do you think? What do you anticipate the conversations being about? Because book conversations about books are always interesting with your readers. Are you just open to whatever happens? Are you going to try and guide the conversation a certain way? What's your feeling about when you get out and talk to the John Q.
Well,
public about it?
I really like to know what questions people have about the time
Yeah.
or about why I wrote it the way I did.
Yeah.
Just what and people's reactions. I like hearing their reactions to the book. It's always wonderful if someone tells you that, you know, this is really almost rare for me, but your book changed my life.
Sure.
You'd love to hear that. But, you know, in this particular case, because the book is about such a serious subject, war, and because now we have some wars in other parts of the world, the book has a bit of relevance, really. I mean,
Sure.
people. So I think that I didn't know this when I started the book in 2017. We didn't have the COVID yet, and we didn't have the wars yet. Those
Right.
two wars that we have right now.
Yep.
So it wasn't, it was almost like just a historical story, but now it seems more relevant.
Yeah. See, you never know. You never, oh, so you started it pre-COVID. So this was your COVID project to some degree. It ended up being anyway. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, nice to have a thing that you can do in your bedroom every day
yes.
when you can't leave it anyway.
That's right.
So, all right. So you're looking forward. And isn't it interesting? Because you've written two other novels. You published two other novels. I always find it interesting that people's responses to the book, all to my stuff, some of it's predictable, but some of it surprised me. It's almost like they're kind of reading their own book in a way, because they have their own things that they focus on, their own things that they care about that surprise them. Do you enjoy that, the uniqueness
Well,
of their experience of it?
I enjoy when people bring out something in the book that I hadn't thought about, and because
Yeah.
people do have different reactions, they relate to different. One person told me they related to a different character in the book that wasn't even Kate, the main character.
See?
I thought that was interesting. The mother is a fairly large character. She's
Yeah.
rather neurotic,
Yeah.
actually, and this one person just loved the mother. So
See?
that's fine. You know,
Yeah.
I like that. I don't
People.
really like the strongly critical reviews, obviously.
Really?
We
Why
have
is
to deal
that?
with
Why is that, Linda?
it.
Why don't you like people telling you what's wrong with your book?
Well, I actually, if it's constructive, I'd be
Yeah.
happy if they told me before it was
No.
published, you
Listen,
know?
no, it's so pointless. Reviews are so slippery, because it's like one person has an experience and they tell you about it. And it's like, it was funny. Once I had a friend of mine who said, oh, my mom read your novel and she has some issues with it here and there. Should I tell you? And I'm like, no. She's like, well, he said, well, why not? I said, well, what if the thing she has an issue with, this other person loves? What am I supposed to, like, who am I listening to? I can't have it. He's like, oh, I don't, he still couldn't get it. But so that's, I kind of, I don't know. Does that, that's how I feel about a lot of people's opinions about my published stuff. It's like, it's too late. It's over. Yeah.
You can't please everyone. That's just the way it is.
No, 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 no. And don't try. The only person you can please, Linda, is you. You got to please you. You got to write a book that you love. And clearly, I know it was hard work, but what I sense is that in the end, you liked it. You were pleased with it. You're glad you wrote it. And now you get to have the lovely experience of sharing it with the world. Congratulations again. I'm so pleased I got to you just after you published it. And I hope you're toiling away on book number four. Is that true?
Well, I am trying to write another one, but I don't know. Kate's War was a big experience. It took a long time, and I had to make many revisions. So
Yeah.
I don't know. I would need a bit of breathing space here.
Why? Write an easy one. Don't just, you should just put yourself down. I think you're an outliner, but you should just like pants it. just sit down, see what happens. That's my advice to you. See what happens. Let the imagination run wild. Okay, listen, again, congratulations. The book is Kate's War, where all fine books are sold. But I'm not quite done with you. I'm not quite done with you, Linda. I want you to think about the writing you've done since you, on that fateful day, agreed to take that writing course from your husband. I want you to think about the writing you've done. And if writing has taught you anything about being a person, about life, it's taught you what?
What has it taught me?
Yeah.
I think the main thing is persistence.
Yeah.
Don't you agree? I mean, as a writer, you have to finish it. You have to keep going. Yes?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I think that's the main thing, really.
Good. Good. We can never have enough of it. We can never have enough of it. Linda, thank you so much. Congratulations. And this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. I wish I could have asked you more about your books.
Oh, who cares about my books? It's so boring. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Perseverance. I think that's the second show in a row where perseverance is what writing has taught. Well, doesn't surprise me. You need it. You sure do. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. I want to thank all of you out there for listening. And so, yeah, persevere. I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier to persevere when you are doing something you love than when you're doing something you don't like. So, go out there, find something you love to do, and do it.